is this Jet's Toy Hut? I like the selection of Star Wars toys you've got, but I've ordered from online sellers before, and it must have been packed by Ugnaughts because everything came shattered into tiny fragments.
Oh, Blaster, you know, Puna.
The Great Exalted Toy Hut wishes to inform you that your orders will be shipped out hand-packed.
Hand-packed by Ugnaughts?
Oh, Chupa Hatama, boo-boo.
Oh my, Toy Hut never just tosses a collectible into a shipping box. All orders are packed secure using packing peanuts, bubble wrap, air pillows, or packaging paper. Better even than being frozen in carbonite.
What if I order something shaped like, say, a TIE fighter?
Boshuda.
Toy Hut has the best zero-movement packing and shipping online, and they have 7 sizes of custom Toy Hut boxes and never pack a collectible loose. Furthermore, the mighty Toy Hut wishes to warn you that no galaxy is too far, far away for their smugglers to get to.
I heard I can get a free vinyl sticker if I order something over 25 Republic credits. What if I order something for 23? Can I still have the sticker?
The magnanimous Toy Hut warns you not to push your luck.
ToyHut.com.
All too easy.
Something to eat? I wish. I'm Kevin Leeson.
Let them eat cat.
I'm Torrin Atkinson.
I could go for a little Petrus. I'm Joel Fulgham, and this is...
Caustic Soda!
Famine.
Oh, I'm so hungry.
The Four Horsemen, episode 2.
Now, we mentioned in the last Horsemen episode that we're going to be tackling this more about the personification of the Four Horsemen. Is that true of this episode
it's
well?
It's not as true about famine as it was about pestilence. The thing about pestilence was we've done a lot of pestilence-related topics in their own episodes. We haven't done a famine episode, and also famine as a horseman, there's not a ton of information out there that I found. Mostly, I mean, I've got some.
He does ride the black horse, though, which
That's correct.
The coolest of the horses.
He's a skinny guy.
The word origin of famine comes straight from Latin, famus, meaning hunger, starvation, or famine. It's of an unknown origin before that.
Je famished.
So,
je suis famé.
The only phobia I could find was citophobia, which is the fear of eating.
How do you spell that?
Citophobia.
Oh,
citophobia.
Maybe it's cytophobia?
Or it could be. Well, I would think cytophobia would be CYT.
Yeah, I would think that too.
Cytoplasm.
Oh, for a cunning linguist.
Maybe it's citophobia because you got to be sitting in order to eat.
I don't.
No, I can eat.
Eat on the run?
I could eat upside down. Yeah, lying down.
Like a caterpillar.
That's it. But you'd end up with like crumbs on your chest and stuff like that, right?
You know, that's one of the side effects. It's not a big deal, but that's more to eat later.
But you guys both have dogs.
That's true.
Come by and lick that stuff up.
Oh, I fully admit that one of the main reasons I like having a dog is he cleans up the stuff that I drop on the floor.
Yeah, but then you have to clean up after him. Yeah. But that's a callback to the feces episode.
A famine is a widespread scarcity of food caused by several factors, including crop failure, population unbalance, or government policies. That's actually a fairly new decision.
Right.
It was thought in the past that famine just meant, oh, there's no food, and so people are starving. But we're noticing these days that a major source of famine seems to be governmental either inaction or misaction, where instead of paying attention to feeding its own population with the food sources it has, it might export large amounts of food and allow its local populace to starve, and that still does count as a famine.
It's kind of a chicken and egg thing, right? In that nobody
has
any eggs.
No chickens and no eggs.
Yeah. No, that's the problem. And from Revelations 6, verses 5 to 6, in reference to the four horsemen, I have, when the Lamb opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, come and see! I looked, and there before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice, and this is the only voice that's associated with any of the horsemen. Among the four living creatures say, a quart of wheat for a day's wages, and 3 quarts of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil in the wine. So there's a lot of interpretations of this. many people believe that this actually has to do with that same governmental inaction, which is allowing the staple food sources to become far too expensive, but not worrying about the oil and the wine that the rich people will feed on and be able, still be able to afford.
Right.
And you're seeing that in, we're seeing that in a lot of these famines, that you would think that like everybody gets hit equally. There's just no food. It's not true. It's many people eat just fine during a famine. Mm-hmm. They're well off. So the science of the famine, the United Nations requirements to list a famine are when 20% of the population has fewer than 2,100 kilocalories of food a day.
Kilocalories.
It's what we basically call a calorie when we're talking about dietary calories.
Okay.
A calorie is technically a kilocalorie, 1,000 units of caloric energy. But we call them calories when we talk about food calories. 20% of the population has fewer than 2,100 kilocalories of food a day. 30% of children are acutely malnourished.
Mm.
2 deaths per 10,000 people or 4 deaths per 10,000 per day, limited access to less than 4 liters of water per day, civil strife, and large-scale displacement.
Okay.
The famine
How do you measure civil strife, though?
Yeah, with your civil strifeometer. Okay. Yeah. I would probably in deaths from strife as well.
Number of stories reported in the news.
I think my strifeometer are my ear holes, whether you hear people like crying and screaming and gunfire and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah, if you hear people out your window going, "Ah, I'm so hungry," you might be in the middle of a famine.
I'm so hungry, I'm going to eat this bullet.
Or you hear, "Give me your food, kapow, kapow."
The famine has 4 intertwined principal effects: starvation and thirst, disease, migration, and conflict. It is often difficult to determine whether a victim had died of starvation or diseased, the famished body being too weak to fight off diseases.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Conflict occurs usually in the early stages of famine, if at all.
While they still have energy to fight.
Right, exactly. When they start to recognize, whoa, 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 there's not much food here. And I have guns and those guys don't, and they have food. So I'm going to
punch you in the neck and take
food.
Your banana.
Yeah. happening most often when there's a great disparity between the famine's effects on different groups or classes within the population. As the famine progresses, the people are too weak to fight. In the end, most famines resolve themselves in a new equilibrium between the reduced population and the smaller food supply.
Right.
Oh, this is like a really black, market forces at work here.
Yeah.
Supply and demand. There's tons of demand, not very much supply, and the demand reduces to meet the supply through death.
That's exactly true. Uh-huh. It's exactly what happens. Death from starvation usually occurs when 33-50% of the body weight has been lost. Intractable diarrhea resulting in dehydration is the most common terminal event.
So this is less of an invisible hand and more like just an empty hand.
Here's the
empty
real
hand
bummer.
Bitch slapping you.
The principal mortality is concentrated among the children and the elderly.
Of course, the weak and the infirm.
Right, exactly. A consistent demographic fact is that in all recorded famines, male mortality exceeds female. Even in those populations, such as northern India and Pakistan, where there is a male longevity advantage during normal times.
Weird.
The reasons for this might include the greater female resilience under the pressure of malnutrition and possibly females' naturally higher percentage of body fat. Basically, they can just last longer.
It's because they're absorbing their own babies.
Or that.
just like women, eh? To just wait us out. Just like, stare us down and wait us
out. That's the strategy, is when food is scarce, get pregnant. And then you can eat your own fetus. through the lining. You don't birth it out and then eat it then.
Oh.
It absorbs its nutrients from within your uterus. That's how it works, as far as I know.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works. I got to agree with you. That's internal cannibalism.
Those nutrients all come from you.
Wait, what?
I think even better, you might just want to not allow what put the baby in there to go in that way, but to get the nutrition from it some other way.
Oh, gross.
Listen up, ladies.
That's disgusting.
Is it? Oh. That's
Get
too bad
back
for you.
Back to talking about eating babies.
Famine, therefore, leaves the reproductive core of the population, adult women, lesser affected compared to other population categories, and post-famine periods are often characterized by a rebound with increased births. Mm-hmm. Even the most severe famines have rarely dented population growth for more than a few years.
Because you got a bunch of dudes. Most of the dudes are now dead.
Right.
And you got a handful of dudes, but a whole lot of women
yes.
who survived.
Yeah.
And then, of course, every dude is walking around going, gotta repopulate, baby.
And they're all starting to get nice and plump again.
Yeah, nothing we can do anything about. Just gotta get to humping.
Ladies, I know it's rough, and I know that I'm overly thin and emaciated and disgusting. But come on, we gotta do it for the species.
do it for the species.
Look at the big picture.
So there's a silver lining to famine is what you're saying, Joe.
Yeah, the end of it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it's like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. It feels good when you stop.
What it's like to starve to death.
I've done several diets through my life. I've taught myself that hunger is not an emergency, but do any of us actually know what starvation feels like? Because I don't.
Negative.
Yeah. Closest I came was I had this this kind of health nut guy that I worked with for a while who did this cleanse, he called it, like twice a year. Every 6 months he would do it. Mm-hmm. All you did was drink this like elderberry juice.
Okay.
And eat like a spoonful of flaxseed every day.
Okay.
And for 7 days.
Okay.
So no solid food, no food of any kind.
Wow.
Just water and elderberry juice and flaxseed.
And what did that do for him?
He claimed that it would like clean your internal system out and you would feel energized and refreshed and it would like get rid of all these toxins.
Did you tell him that that's what poo does?
Well, he said it made it even better.
Okay.
It was even.
If you thought taking a poo was good now,
yeah,
wait until you're on your elderberry and flax diet.
I did it at the same time as my buddy's girlfriend because we figured, you know, we could like, you know, be partners in crime and, you know, you could just like, you know, get through it. And on day five, I realized like how mentally deranged we were when she called me like at 10 o'clock one morning crying. She was in tears. And she was asking me how I was doing, and I told her I dreamed about toast the night before.
Dry toast.
And
dry marble rye. Oh, God.
She started talking about dreaming of fried chicken, and I began to, like, just the talk of fried chicken made, like, saliva, like, literally start to run out of my mouth.
And I've had those experiences where the saliva comes out so hard and fast that it hurts your mouth.
I could barely talk. I could, like, I was having trouble because she started saying the words fried chicken. I'm like, oh. And I went, this is horrifying. This is, now, at that point in time, we're, like, 5.5 days in, so I'm like, fuck it. I'm finishing this because I'm only a day and a half away from finishing. But this, he sold me on this bill of goods. Was like, oh, after the first like 3 days, you forget about food entirely. It is not true. That is a lie.
Whenever you went outside, did everyone look like a hamburger and a hot dog?
Yeah, that moment from Seinfeld where Kramer was talking to Newman and he looked like a giant basted turkey, right? I never forgot about food. And that last day they need to ease you back into food. So you start out with some like liquid stuff, like soups and whatnot. Then you have a salad. It's not like it's another 2.5 days after you start eating food again that you get any solid food. Yeah. Otherwise it will like cripple you. So that's the closest I've come.
Okay. So what's it like, Torin?
Individuals experiencing starvation lose substantial fat and muscle mass as the body breaks down these tissues for energy.
Mm-hmm. That's not surprising.
Catabolism is the process of a body breaking down its own muscle and other tissues in order to keep vital systems such as the nervous system and the heart muscle functioning.
So how are cats involved in this?
Catabolism? They take away all of your nutrients.
Oh, I see.
While you sleep.
Uh-huh.
That's when a cat purrs on you and does the little baking cookie things.
They're stealing your
soul.
That's
catabolism.
Yeah. I thought it had something to do with, you know, punching bag your testicles or something.
You'd feel that. You'd wake up.
Okay, right.
Vitamin deficiency is a common result of starvation, often leading to anemia, beriberi, and scurvy. Uh-huh. These diseases collectively also cause diarrhea, skin rashes, edema, and heart failure. Individuals are often irritable and lethargic.
That sounds like an understatement.
Early symptoms include impulsivity. So don't go shopping.
While you're starving.
While you're starving. You'll buy something you may regret.
Acid wash jeans.
Irritability, hyperactivity, and other symptoms. Atrophy of the stomach weakens the perception of hunger, since the perception is controlled by the percentage of the stomach that is empty.
Okay, so you're starving, and then you actually feel like you're getting less hungry because your stomach is shrinking.
Right.
So, and then it becomes a downward spiral because you're less hungry. You don't think you need as much when, in fact,
I'm so starving, I couldn't eat another bite.
Yeah.
Victims of starvation are often too weak to sense thirst and therefore become dehydrated. Too weak to sense thirst.
Can't even imagine.
All movements become painful due to muscle atrophy and dry, cracked skin that is caused by severe dehydration. With a weakened body, diseases are commonplace. Fungi, for example, often grow under the esophagus, making swallowing unbearably painful. So even when you get that delicious turkey dinner, oh, it hurts so much.
Because a fungus grows in your esophagus.
I guess so. I couldn't find out the name of the fungus, but Wikipedia wouldn't lie to me.
An esophageal fungus that makes eating painful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is all bad.
The energy deficiency inherent in starvation causes fatigue and renders the victim more apathetic over time. As the starving person becomes too weak to move or even eat, their interaction with the surrounding world diminishes. And irregular menstruation may occur.
Ooh, so there's, again, silver lining here.
Uterus lining.
Yeah.
Uterus lining.
Yeah, it's not silver.
It's kind of a reddish, burgundy brown.
One of the longest droughts / famines that I found on record is the classic Mayan droughts and famines that happened from about 800 through to 1000 CE. It may have begun as early as 790 and was over by about 910. It devastated...
Oh, only 120 years.
Yeah. And it was a little bit longer than... Like, it was still a drought from even after that for up to almost another 100 years.
Jeez,
it devastated all of the Maya lowlands and highlands as well. There are no...
Oh, but the midlands were okay.
Everyone
flocked to the midlands.
There are no hieroglyphic dates anywhere in the lowlands after 910 CE until the rise of Mayapan in the late 12th century.
Oh. So for like 300 years, there was basically nobody down there.
Right, but it was just unlivable. Like everybody there died off and everybody else left.
Right,
too weak to carve rocks.
The persistent length of the droughts from 800 to 1000 CE prevented the Maya lowland area from recovering after the collapse. The Maya succeeded in creating a civilization in a seasonal desert by creating a system of water storage and management entirely dependent upon consistent rainfall and had not received any rainfall for decades at a time. So they had come to this area that, you know, was pretty desert-like, but they'd figured out how to make it work, and then it got worse.
Yeah, you got to just feel like somebody's fucking with you at that stage of the game. You're just like, Jesus.
Right.
Like some big joke.
Oh, Quetzalcoatl, why?
How many decades, though, would it take for you to, like, just move?
You have no car or anything, right? Like, so how many decades does it take you to get anywhere, to get away from it? Well, let's walk for 10 years and maybe we'll get out of where this drought is. Which direction do you go?
Well, you pull out your McNally's Road Atlas.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you go, you look at, and then you go to the map that has like.
Dude, temporary... There's an app for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Pull out your iPhone. You go to the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
And you see where you're getting the most rainfall.
What is
and then
up
you
with
go.
These barbaric civilizations not being able to handle hunger and droughts like we
it's
can?
It's so simple.
Look, it's been a drought and a famine since before I was born.
Uh-huh.
This is all we've known.
Oh,
dying and death and starvation for 100 years.
Maybe it's not even doesn't even count as drought anymore. If like you're literally born after the drought began, you're like, oh shit, the rain just doesn't. I don't even know what rain is.
Yeah, what do we got? Don't even complain. Food.
I'm just gonna lie here.
When something falls from the sky, you're like, whoa, what the hell is that? What the? God is peeing on me.
And did I love it.
Did I step on a jellyfish? What's
cold
going on
showers,
here?
Hello.
The Russian famine of 1601 to 1603 was Russia's worst famine in terms of proportional effect on the population, killing perhaps 2 million people, a third of Russian people, during what's called the Time of Troubles, when the country was unsettled politically later invaded by the Polish Commonwealth. I didn't even know Russia was invaded by Poland. That explains why they invade them back, I
Turn
suppose.
Yeah. Fair play.
Yeah. The many deaths contributed to social disruption and helped bring about the downfall of Boris Godunov, elected as Tsar during the interregnum. I don't even know what that word means. The famine was part of a
interregnum.
Interregnum.
Damn near killed him.
Let's look at what that means. An interregnum is a period of discontinuity or gap in a government, organization, or social order.
So it was kind of like a little anarchy going on.
So he was the leader during the time of no real leader.
Right, right.
Got it.
Good title to have. I feel the same way.
You know, that feels like one of those titles that you get just after the fact. When they went, you know what? He was the leader, but it was pretty leaderless now that we look back on it. But at the time, he's kind of like, I am the leader. And they go, what should we do? I don't know.
Starve. The minimum requirement is for you to say you're in charge.
Yes. Okay. Done.
Whether or not you actually do anything.
All right. Step two, do something. Oh. I'm kind of right in the middle of something right now.
The Russian famine was part of a worldwide record cold winters and crop disruption, which in 2008, geologists linked to the volcanic eruption of Huayna Putina in Peru.
The Poutine Volcano.
So a volcano erupted in Peru.
With cheese curds and gravy.
With cheese curds and gravy. That's where all, so all the food coalesced and came away from Russia.
Yes.
On the other side of the world.
That is interesting that a volcanic eruption in Peru caused record temperature and bad crops in Russia.
I'm guessing what happened is it made the
climate change.
Climate, yeah. It reflected more of the sunlight hitting our Earth.
Yeah, you get a blanket of ash in the atmosphere.
So the only place
for an indeterminate time.
The only place worse than Russia to be during this stretch was probably at the base of that volcano in Peru.
I would think it was probably pretty bad there.
Depending on which way the wind was blowing.
1845 to 1852, Ireland, the Great Potato Famine.
The Leeson clan moved to Canada from Ireland in 1842.
Oh, look at that, just ahead of time.
Dodging bullets.
So you can tell us a personal story about the Irish potato famine.
What was it like coming over
in 1840? Well, no, we beat it. We came in under the wire.
Oh, okay.
We were 3 years ahead of the famine.
Ah, get the hell
these
out
potatoes,
of here.
These potatoes are starting to smell kind of funny. we should get out of here.
So the potatoes turned black. Now, potatoes, they actually have almost all of your dietary requirements.
They're an amazing food.
A potato.
Yeah.
You can make guns out of them, too.
Yeah. And they have ears. No, that's
they
corn.
They have eyes.
They have eyes.
Oh, corn has ears.
Never seen potatoes.
Corn hears what you're saying. Potatoes see what you're doing.
This is why we bury them.
That's why we put them in the cold storage. I can't do it. The potatoes are looking at me.
You never leave
turn
a
it
potato.
Around. Oh, my God. There's more eyes on that potato. So the potatoes turned black. Some thought it was a divine intervention. Mm-hmm. Others thought it was lightning.
The English just thought it was good luck.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll deal with them.
Of course, in the years after the famine, scientists discovered the blight was, in fact, caused by a fungus. Phytophthora infestans.
Oh, okay.
It was not until almost 40 years after the famine that scientists discovered a cure, namely a solution of copper sulfate sprayed before the fungus gained root. But during the famine, no such luck. No idea. Not a clue. The blight affected other areas as well, Belgium, North France, England, and Holland.
But they probably had more than just potatoes to eat.
Here's the thing about Ireland, the land of Ire.
Okay.
And perhaps that's how it got its name, because of this famine. Because
they were all kind of cranky and irritable as a result of...
There was a lot of English landowners in Ireland.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were definitely colonized.
And the Irish usually had these little slanty shanties, these kind of one-room houses.
Mm-hmm.
And they were counting on the potatoes.
To pay their rent.
And when you get your potato blight, that's bad. It's not the huge famine that it was to become.
Right.
But it's bad. You can't, half penny short of your rent, you're on the street. No, zero tolerance policy for being late on your rental payment.
Right, a little eviction notice.
And then you're out on the street where it just so happens they enact a law that it's illegal to be outside of your home after dark.
Well, it's because you had all these inconvenient Irish roaming the streets,
exactly.
Right? Because they were all getting kicked off of their farms as a result of the blight. And so you're like, well, we don't want the Irish in the streets after dark. Let's make it illegal for them to be out on the street after
dark. Exactly. So then...
But it's not legal for them to go back to their homes.
Well, they don't have a home anymore. Right. It's not theirs.
Yes, precisely.
So your choices basically are to be arrested and go to a workhouse, which are quite infamous as basically being concentration camps.
Right. Where you can grow potatoes for free.
For someone else. Or you can get on what they have been known to call coffin ships, which basically a diaspora, everyone leaves the country.
Does it feel like a coordinated attempt to actually get rid of all the Irish from Ireland?
That's actually the accusation.
The conspiracy theorist.
Well,
is it a conspiracy or is there some fact to back this up?
I don't know.
There's no letter from the Queen saying, let's devise a plan to drive all the Irish out of Ireland.
Well, I will tell you that although the potato crop failed, the country was still producing and exporting more than enough grain crops to feed the population.
Right.
And almost throughout the five-year famine, Ireland remained a net exporter of food.
Mm-hmm.
And just as one specific example, there's many... over 800,000 gallons of butter was exported to England from Ireland during 9 months of the worst year of famine.
Right, and they used it to deep fry Ireland's hopes and dreams.
Yes.
Yeah, a standard governmental response or standard proper governmental response to famine is to actually close the ports for outgoing food to ensure that the food you're producing goes to your own population to keep them alive.
Right.
The English did not close the ports. in Ireland during the famine. They allowed the food to completely leave the country, and they allowed
Irish to leave the country.
Mm-hmm. And well, they definitely wanted the Irish to leave. And you mentioned the coffin ships. There were quite a few of those. The Irish tried to flee the country because of this famine, like in huge numbers. I mentioned earlier that population recovers within a few years from famine. That's true unless the famine leads to mass emigration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Pre-potato famine, the population of Ireland was 8 million people. Today, the population of Ireland is 6.3 million people. It has still not recovered from the famine over 150 years ago.
I heard some figure like that, like 25% of the population died.
Right.
And then who knows how many, what percent of the population actually left.
Yeah, it was approximately 1 million people, so one-eighth of the population, okay. So 12 and a half. And 1 million more emigrated almost instantly or during the famine, and then people just kept leaving.
Right.
And this led to the,
I don't want to eat potatoes
mass
anyway.
Immigration of the Irish into America.
Right.
Where at the time they were unwelcome refugees.
Yes.
You know, we now think of Irish as just regular old white people and police officers and all that stuff. But it used to be the Irish were the ones coming over here and taking our jobs.
But
now we reserve that for Mexicans.
That's right.
Well, every population that like immigrates to the country is always like unwelcome.
Exactly.
When they first show up, right? Jon Stewart did a bit on this on The Daily Show when they did a bunch of research on like, you know, notices and reports and newspapers from the 19th century talking about the Irish, and it was Bill O'Reilly, because he was going after Bill O'Reilly for being anti-immigration, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you'd enacted all these policies that you're pushing for 200 years ago, you wouldn't be in the New World. So let's be rational here.
Right. Historians talking about Ireland treat this as basically a turning point in the history of the entire country, that they actually describe the time before the famine as pre-famine. It has an official pre-famine designation. PF, yeah.
Year 6 PF.
The famine soured the relations between the majority of the Catholic Irish people and the Crown in London, heightening Irish nationalism, and eventually led to Irish independence in the 20th century.
Right.
It seems that if you purposefully do choose to allow a population to die off, eventually they'll get over it and hate you for it.
Right, right.
So yeah, you probably shouldn't do it.
There's the whole like, hey, people are people.
What
right?
if I feed on hate?
Well, you know.
What if hate is my potatoes?
Oh, then you're doing fine. Are you saying that the...
A good plate of steak and hate.
If during the famine, the Irish had hated just a little bit more and they wouldn't have died nearly in droves?
Well,
like
no,
they,
they were supplying the hate to the Sith, who are the British royal family.
Yes, of course. That was their plot along.
That's why they only have red lightsabers.
And another note, the coffin ships that the Irish would get onto to come over to the New World, which would be North America, had about a 30% mortality rate.
Right, because
on average,
you know, somebody,
on average,
you just need one case of dysentery and it would spread like wildfire, I would imagine.
Yeah,
right?
And much like the people who are smuggling Mexicans into America these days, the captains of these ships really didn't care about the Irish they were bringing over. They took their money, put them in a ship as crammed as they could, got them over to North America, and then just dumped them off.
Right.
And didn't care at all about their health. There were a few what they would call good ships that had 100% survival rates and made several trips, and the captains actually cared.
Sorry?
It's because they ate each other.
That wouldn't be 100%. Unless, of course,
it's the new 100%.
unless you cut off a leg.
There you go.
You're going to survive, but you won't have a leg. But at least we'll all have something to eat.
Well, no, how about if you roll in and you just, everybody on the boat is alive. There's no dead bodies anywhere.
Yeah, but everybody's got one leg.
But like, you know, I mean, maybe 105 people got on and there's only like 90 now, but it's 100% survival.
Oh, I see. I don't have a lot of information on the Russian famine of 1921, but I do have a photo of some Russian 1921 cannibals.
Oh, we got to put this on, we'll put this on the website, causticsodapodcast.com.
Yeah. This is pretty bad.
Oh,
not such a stigma that they won't pose for a photograph, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's mom and dad, and here's Uncle Phil.
I wonder who took the photo and how they talked them into posing for this photo.
It almost looks like they're all dead, though. I mean, he seems to be posed, and maybe his hand kind of holding up his thing. Is she alive?
Yes, I think she's alive. She's standing erect.
Okay, she's pretty weathered.
But there's what appears to be a child.
A child's head and an upper torso.
Yeah.
And then some meaty bits that look...
with a skull that seems to have some flesh from the face flayed off of
it. As would be described, playing Fallout 3, strange meat.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
You pick up some strange
meat. Now, what do you think? The child's body seems to be kind of blackened. Do you think that's just that's aging or that frostbite? Maybe they're leaving it out in a snowbank to preserve it.
I get a cold feeling looking at this. Yeah. It looks dry and cold.
They're wearing basically a bunch of leather and furs.
Yeah.
It looks pretty effing cold. It's true.
Yeah. It looks like you don't have to worry about any of this going bad.
The world is their icebox.
This leads to one that I do have a bit more information on. 1932 to 1933, the Holodomor.
Or Holodomor.
Or Holodomor.
It sounds like something out of Lord of the Rings.
One does not simply walk into Holodomor. You have to fly a giant eagle.
This is like the perfect marriage between the holodeck and Harry Potter villain.
Right. Yes. Holodomor or Holodomor, I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's Ukrainian. It means extermination by hunger.
Oh.
Yeah. This was
this is kind of like Holocaust.
I would guess so.
This is a hall of food.
It was a man-made famine in the Ukrainian SSR between 1932 and 1933. During the famine, which is also known as the Terror Famine in Ukraine and Famine Genocide in Ukraine, millions of Ukrainians died of starvation in a peacetime catastrophe unprecedented in the history of the Ukraine. The famine affected the Ukrainian SSR as well as Moldavian ASSR, which was a part of the Ukrainian SSR at the time, in the spring of 1932 and from February to July of 1933, with the greatest number of victims recorded in the spring.
So this is a man-made problem. This was created by policy or whatnot. So who inflicted this upon the Ukrainian people?
Some historians claim the famine was purposely engineered by the Soviet authorities to attack Ukrainian nationalism, while others view it as an unintended consequence of the economic problems associated with radical economic changes implemented during Soviet industrialization.
Well, because the Ukraine was actually part of the USSR in this state. So why would they want to starve their people?
Well, on 7th August 1932, a law came into force that stipulated that all food was state property and that mere possession of food was evidence of a crime. Among the most enthusiastic enforcers of the law were urban members of youth organizations educated under the Soviet system who fanned out into the countryside in order to prevent the theft of state property.
Would it be counted as theft if it was in your stomach?
Maybe. Is there any food in there?
Well, there is now that you're dead.
No, they got to stab them and cut them open to find out, right? It's gathering evidence. It's that whole, if the witch floats, then we murder her. And if she sinks, then she's innocent.
But then he's dead and he becomes food. And he becomes property of the state.
Oh, there you go. They constructed and staffed watchtowers, over 700 in the Odessa region alone, to ensure that no peasants took food home from the fields. The youth brigades lived off the land, eating what they confiscated from the peasants. They often humiliated these starving peasants by forcing them to box each other for sport or forcing them to crawl and bark like dogs.
This is the origin of bum fights.
And naturally, under the pretext of grain confiscation, the brigades routinely raped women living alone.
Oh, naturally.
Death toll estimates were between 2.4 and 7.5 million. The exact number of deaths is hard to determine due to lack of records.
That's a wide range.
Yeah.
That's a lot of range. 2.4 to 7.5.
I have a little anecdote here from one of our listeners, Orlando Crespo. He was reading the book Bloodlands, Europe Between Hitler and Stalin by Timothy Snyder. And in it, he goes into great depths about the Ukrainian famine. And here's a little story from the book. Several women in Kharkiv formed a sort of orphanage for the children that were homeless and in dire need of food. Quote, "One day the children suddenly felt silent. We turned around to see what was happening, and they were eating the smallest child, little Petrus."
Little Petrus.
Oh, this is a total Lord of the Flies.
"They were tearing strips from him and eating them."
Little Petrus.
"And Petrus was doing the same."
What?
"He was tearing strips from himself and eating them."
What?
"He ate as much as he could. The other children put their lips to his wounds and drank his blood."
Oh, my God.
But the wounds were just his stomach. Quote. All the food he would eat would just come out the stomach.
Very itchy and scratchy.
He'd eat it again and again. Yes, exactly.
Very itchy and scratchy.
Yeah, this is what when you get that hungry, I cannot imagine that kind of starvation, that I would start pulling strips off my own body.
Your own skin.
I mean, I chew my fingernails. I've done pretty good about stopping that recently, but damn.
Wow.
It's because you put all that hot, spicy mustard on it. It makes it so delicious.
They were eating Little Petrus.
Little Petrus.
This was just like a law that was, you know, made in Moscow, and then you just had these really overzealous youth enforcers who like probably misinterpreted the intention of the law.
Who knows?
I can't imagine. There's probably all sorts of different reasons.
I would say the raping is always taking it a step too far.
Right. I mean, maybe this is all just a what comes first, the raping or the reason to rape?
You can either tread on other people or be the downtrodden. That could probably be part of it. Like, if you don't run around and help us confiscate food, we're going to confiscate your food.
It's feeling a lot like Pol Pot's Cambodia, right?
Yeah. Again, this is what we're seeing is, you know, you start looking through all the famine, and sure, they get started off by there was a drought or a blight or something like that.
A limited supply of grain. And so they, you don't take the grain away. We need to take it all in and then redistribute it because we're a Soviet republic, and there are other parts of the nation that need grain and don't have easy access to it, like in the Ukraine and blah blah blah. It seems like on the surface it makes sense,
right?
But then in the application of it, it goes insane.
Yeah, it's just that the government or whatever support structure that there is around there doesn't deal with it properly, and that's actually what leads to the famine. Famines are pretty much preventable is the feeling I get.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you go, oh shit, we're not getting much food here, we better get some food in, and you do what needs to get done.
I mean, in 1932 in Russia, I mean, it's a pretty sizable country. I mean, you didn't have instantaneous communication or, like, you know, I bet you the regional authorities were pretty much on their own and were sort of like left to their own devices. And once you start with this really draconian policy, if you actually go, wait a minute, this is a bad idea, then it sort of like delegitimizes everything you've been doing up to that point, right?
Yeah, and if you don't have anybody looking at the big picture, recognizing that maybe the little things that you're doing to try to fix it, you know, such as now we've got to confiscate the food to make sure there's enough for everybody, isn't actually causing the problem.
Right.
Right? That you're confiscating food from people who need the food.
I'm still not 100% sure how the raping fits into
it really doesn't.
The food part of it.
That's extracurricular.
Ah, 2.5 to 7.5 million deaths. It's nutty.
Now, there were also, as Torin mentioned...
Some good famines?
No. There were also theories that this wasn't actually caused on purpose, but was because of the switch over to the Soviet way of doing
things. Right, to the centralizing everything, as opposed to letting each individual region take care of its own business.
Right. The collectivization was not popular among the peasantry, and it led to several peasant revolts. The first five-year plan changed the output expected from Ukrainian farms from the familiar crop of grain to unfamiliar crops like sugar beets and cotton. In addition, the situation was exacerbated by poor administration of the plan and the lack of relevant general management. So they basically said, well, here's our big idea. You're going to grow this now. And they didn't know how to grow it. And they didn't know how to make enough to make enough food to feed people. And then, of course, they had all the other policies.
Shitty planning.
I'm going to go wait on a limb here and say, okay, there's two theories about the cause of it. One is, you know, administrative mismanagement and incompetence. Yep. And the other one is...
genocide.
Is genocide.
Could be a little bit of both.
It could be a little bit of both. But as sad as it is, maybe I'm just like a natural cynic, but I really feel like incompetence is by far the more likely.
As of 2008, the Parliament of Ukraine and the governments of 19 countries have recognized the Holodomor as an act of genocide. Russian Federation accepts historic information about the Holodomor, but rejects the argument that it was genocide by pointing out the fact that millions of non-Ukrainian Soviet citizens also died because of the famine.
Yeah, I'm willing to say that it maybe started off because of incompetence, and then when it happened, they went,
all these Ukrainians are dying.
Incompetent aside.
Incompetent aside.
Oops, our people are dying. Isn't that part of what we're supposed to take care of as a governmental system?
Mm-hmm.
For the people.
I got my sugar beet.
Yeah. China, 1958 to 1962. This, I think, is the biggest source of death by famine. Between 10 and 30 million people died as a result of Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward.
One great leap forward, two great leaps back, my friend.
Or 10 million leaps back. His plan involved modernizing agriculture and increasing grain production. Farmers were collectivized into communes of about 25,000 people and had to give the state a large percentage of their crops. Officials often exaggerated the size of harvests, and in many places, the entire grain harvest was seized together with livestock, vegetables, and cash crops. China's leaders appeared to have been unaware of the severity of the famine. From 1958 until 1961, China doubled its grain exports and cut imports of food. So what it sounds like is they made these, they were like, now you're going to be in these 25,000 person collections and you have to produce
X number of grain
for the glorious People's Republic. And if you don't produce enough, you're not good citizens. And kind of the manager said, well, of course we've produced enough. Here's our 80%, which ended up actually being 100% because they didn't produce as much as they said.
Right.
And so all those farmers were starving.
Right, because they didn't hold back enough to actually feed themselves.
So middle management incompetence is kind of the number one thing that I've seen
here. Or that classic, ooh, I need to give them as big a number as possible and I'll become a really important party member and they'll be really impressed. And
then I'll get my share of food.
Yeah,
and
I'll
all
skim
it's
going
to cost is 10 to 30 million horrible starvation deaths.
The central government itself wasn't even aware it was going on for three years.
Don't tell them.
Yeah, well, we'll
bring them down.
You know, this is the guy in the office who like does something that costs the company he works for some money, and he just like is doing everything he can to sweep it under the rug, to cover it up, to do this.
It's like an episode of Three's Company. It's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah, where's Larry in this equation? Who is Larry in the Chinese?
Jack, where's all the grain? trying to do a Mr. Furley failed horribly. Sorry.
Don Knotts is not easy to do.
No.
He's so bony.
Banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. You with the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too. Here's cacciatore, Dory. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food fills ya. Work my hands to the bone in the kitchen alone. You better eat if it kills ya. Pass me a pancake mandrake. Having a derby irvy. Look in the fendel mendel. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hannah, Davy, Tommy, Dora, Mandrake. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Pasta fazula, Tallulah. Oh, do have a bagel, Fagel. Now don't be so bashful, Nashville. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hey, this is a party, Marty. There, you get the cherry, Jerry. Now look, don't be so picky, Mickey. 'Cause everybody eats when they come to my house. All of my friends are welcome. Don't make me coax you, moax you. Eat the tables, the chairs, the napkins, who cares? You gotta eat if it chokes you. Oh, do have a knish, knishya. Ask him the latke, matke. Chili con carne for Barney. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Face, Buster, Share.
Torin, you've got a pop quiz for us?
A famine food pop quiz.
Ooh, famine food.
That sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
A famine food, or poverty food, is any inexpensive or readily available foodstuff used to nourish people in times of extreme poverty or starvation, as during a famine.
Makes sense.
So this is a McDonald's hamburger, not cheeseburger, because it's less complex.
Kind of.
Right, okay.
Often the food is therefore strongly associated with the hardship under which it was eaten, and is therefore socially downplayed or rejected as a food source in times of relative plenty.
So this is definitely McDonald's hamburgers.
Foods associated with famine need not be nutritionally deficient or unsavory, having been driven to consume them in large amounts and for long periods of time. However, people remain averse to them long after the immediate need to eat them has subsided.
Okay.
So the test is, I will name either the food or the place.
Okay.
And you give me the correspondent food or place.
Place or food. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Rutabagas. You can ask for hints.
Peru?
It's rutabagas. Ukraine?
I'll give you a hint. World War I.
France.
Poland?
Germany. Used as a food of last resort in Europe during World War I and remained particularly unpopular in Germany.
Is it a root vegetable?
Rutabagas is a turnip.
All right. Yeah.
Don't we eat those? People like rutabagas?
Not in Germany.
No.
I also don't like rutabagas.
No, I don't like turnips either.
Netherlands.
Tulips.
Oh, they could eat tulip bulbs, couldn't they?
Yeah,
they could eat the bulbs. I'll let you have that, though. I'm going to go with tree bark.
Tulip Dikes. Bulbs.
Oh, there you go.
And sugar beets.
Woo-hoo.
Were eaten in the German-occupied parts of the Netherlands during the hunger winter of 1944 to 45.
That makes sense.
I should have said clogs. That would have been funnier.
Windmills. Windmills.
Maine and on the Atlantic coast of Canada.
Maine and the Atlantic coast. Lobster.
Oh, yeah. I do know that lobster is a hunger food in some places. I don't know if it is in Maine. So I'm going to say, in Maine. Is there some kind of fish that people don't like eating? Like, I'm going to say some kind of fish. I don't know.
You are both correct. Fish and shellfish were once considered poverty food, and people would bury lobster shells in their yards rather than disposing of them in their rubbish, so their neighbors would not learn they were reduced to eating lobster.
Well, they're bugs in the ocean, if you think about it. Yeah.
Sea bugs.
But very tasty sea bugs, especially in hot butter.
Especially with garlic butter, yeah.
Yeah.
Spam.
Everywhere? The entire world?
The American military? I don't...
Widely eaten in the UK during wartime due to lack of fresh meat available. Due to much a greater availability of meat, Spam is now used as a sandwich filling and for Spam fritters rather than as a replacement for other meat in its own right. But I believe it's very popular in Hawaii.
Spam is?
Yes,
I believe.
It is. Hmm. I saw a one of those Food Network shows where everywhere they went, they had fried Spam.
I've had Spam. I don't, like, hate it, but I wouldn't...
Why would you choose it over any of the other millions of things that you could eat?
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
Oh, variety is the spice of life.
I think I'd rather eat a rolled-up newspaper than Spam.
No. Fry up that Spam, I'll eat it before newspaper.
All right.
Ireland.
Potato?
Well, potatoes is what they wanted. Did they eat...
I guess, yeah, they didn't eat a lot of potatoes.
Tubers.
I still got to go with potato just because. Priests.
Broccoli.
Close.
Oh.
Several species of edible kelp.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Including dulse and Irish moss were eaten in Ireland by coastal peasants during the potato famine of 1846 to 48.
Okay.
Oh, I can imagine myself grabbing almost anything that I thought was edible and putting it in my mouth if I'm starving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd suck on a rock.
Yeah. Like I said, tree
bark.
But
now, after the famine, I hate eating rocks.
Yeah.
Now, the last one, possibly the hardest.
Okay.
The northern Italian regions of Piedmont, Emilia-Romagna, and Liguria.
Northern Italy. It's pretty
Liguria.
Mountainous up there.
I'll give you a hint. World War II.
Oh.
World War II. Babies. Okay. They ate babies.
Pizza.
Cats.
Oh.
Cats are a famine food in those regions.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It can only really truly be considered a famine food if they ate them regularly before.
Well, maybe they did.
Oh, maybe it was a little regional cuisine.
I would imagine cats being very stringy.
Do you ever look at Kovo and go, I wonder.
Often.
Oh, really? He is quite plump.
And then I wouldn't have to clean out his litter box anymore.
In the news. March 17th, 2012, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Mogadishu.
A large amount of food sent by the UN to the Somali capital during last year's famine never reached the starving people it was intended for, an Associated Press investigation has found.
This is warlords for sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the World Food Program supplies went to the black market, some to feed livestock.
Oh.
And across the city, feeding sites handed out far less food than records indicate they should have.
Mm-hmm.
Some food was trucked directly from an aid agency warehouse to the market to be sold for profit. Relatives of Somali aid workers would receive large handouts while others went without. One of their reports spoke of supplies being fed to livestock. A Somali government official stole 74 metric tons of food, according to an internal WFP report obtained by the AP.
That would be a hell of a moo-moo to shoplift 72 metric tons. Like, you would need some really creative...
Or a lot of trips.
It's just a whole bunch of Dan Aykroyds in Santa suits.
This is like a Klinger in MASH trying to steal a Jeep by swallowing, you know...
a piece at a time.
One piece at a time.
Do you think he stole the food by swallowing it a piece at a time and pooped it out on the outside? They'll never expect.
This is like the Somalian Kopi Luwak. He's like, oh, it's a delicacy.
Maybe this... do you think this official looks a lot like Jabba the Hutt? They wheeled him in on his huge hovering palanquin.
Ubi Numa.
He just went, ah.
Mogadishu.
The hunger crisis was blamed on a combination of drought, warfare, and a refusal by insurgents to grant some aid groups access to areas it controls. No, you can't come in and feed these people.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I seem to recall that also happened in the Irish potato famine.
Right.
The government wouldn't let other countries who wanted to aid bring in food.
Now, I don't really understand the motive. It's like...
too much paperwork.
Yeah, well, but even if you're like one of these government officials who's like stealing it, like... it wouldn't even be like, sure, bring the food in. Gives you more to steal. Like, you know, I mean, I don't understand why anybody would say, no. Don't bring any of that free food near here.
It's the insurgents saying you can't bring it in, right? It's the people not in the cities that is saying, no, you can't bring it here because either we don't trust you or we won't get it or it will feed our enemies or the government officials are going to get rich off it. They're going to steal it, so you can't bring it in.
Okay.
I can kind of understand why they would, but really the alternative is everybody dying of starvation.
I saw an episode of Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations where he went to Haiti after the earthquake and stuff like that, and how still devastated that country is. And they were going around and like... because anybody who hasn't seen that show, he goes around and like eats street food and stuff like that. That's the whole thing. He wants to get down to like the street level and eat what the people eat in all these exotic countries and stuff. And
that rich bastard.
They were in this little market, and he was where the people just like have these giant pots and they just like, you know, cook these giant stews and soups and stuff like that. And then they'd had a taste of it, and there were tons of like starving kids like nearby, like begging for food and stuff like that. So what he did is he bought out the entire supply of food that this woman was selling. It's like, I want to buy everything you have to sell for the rest of
the
day.
How much for that whole pot?
How much for that whole pot? And I'll give it to these kids. And
she was like, oh, it's gonna be at least $6 American.
Yeah, like $1.50. Yeah. Cha-ching! Right. And she went fine, no problem. Yep. And she started dishing this stuff out. And like 5 minutes later, these like four dudes with leather belts and sticks just came in and just started whipping these kids and taking the food away from them.
Wow.
Yeah. And and they're rolling camera on it. Like, they've got it on film.
Is there a point in your life where you just go, yeah, I'm evil?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bad guy. Like, do you just do that? Do you just decide to be a bad person and beat starving kids away from food?
Well, Joe, you're a bad person in ways that you don't even understand yet.
Please explain.
Someday wisdom.
Here's the thing. When I find out that I'm a bad person,
well,
I do my best to...
they just haven't found out yet.
Oh, so
nobody told them.
So they're whipping...
they didn't get the pamphlet.
They're whipping these starving children away from the food that will stop them from starving, and they're just not aware that makes them bad
this
people.
This is wrong? I didn't know.
I thought you were supposed to beat children who were hungry.
That's how my dad raised me.
They believe in the philosophy that these children will feed on hate.
Do unto others as you want to do. That is
Anthony Bourdain has colorful language, and he was definitely swearing off camera a lot. His guide translator warned him not to wait in there himself, that they should get in their car and drive away. Yeah, he was pretty disappointed.
He's pretty tall, though. He could take him based on height.
He's a
biggest
dude.
Combat works, right?
Yeah, until one of these guys pulls out a machete, and then it's he's going to get a lot shorter pretty quick. about a head shorter.
2011. Footage shot inside North Korea and obtained by ABC has revealed the extent of chronic food shortages and malnutrition inside the secretive state. Shot over several months by an undercover North Korean journalist, the harrowing footage shows images of filthy, homeless, and orphaned children begging for food and soldiers demanding bribes.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's been stories for years and years and years about, like, widespread hunger in North Korea, and now just, you know, the food isn't getting to where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. And a refusal to deal with the outside world. In order to get what they need, exactly. That they refuse to buckle to outside pressures to, you know, look, we're going to give you this food, but you have to be nicer to your populace.
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe in human rights. And
yeah, well, they go, fuck that. I'm not starving.
In this day and age that people are starving, and there's food available. If you look at world food production and world food demand, There's more than enough food in the world to feed everybody just fine right now.
It's a management problem.
It's getting the food to the people who need it.
But Joe, if we gave some of our food to people in other parts of the world who needed it, mm-hmm. then I wouldn't be able to do my all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue.
As a matter of fact, I think that North America throws away enough food to feed the starving in Africa.
Well, then you've never been to my house. I don't throw anything away. One of those lobster shells, I eat them. I wear them under my shirt as armor.
You are lobstro.
That explains the smell.
I would like to do an all horsemen lesser of two evils, a lesser of two horsemen, if you will.
Oh, this is an interesting idea.
I'm just kind of wondering, we talked about what happens when you starve, and we've done several shows on dying of horrible diseases.
Right, and so pestilence, if we go with the from the TV series Supernatural reference from it, that
right.
you can get like all diseases at once.
Yes, so this is the question. Would you rather die of all diseases at once
Ooh.
Or die of starvation?
All diseases at once?
Basically a horrible melange of...
What's the fastest acting disease?
Oh, it takes... No, no.
Because wouldn't that trump all the other ones?
The suffering length will be the same.
Oh, okay.
So you will... This is what I'm saying. That both will take the same amount of time to die, and you will die.
Okay. Okay. I mean, there are two horsemen involved.
Horsemen have shown up.
And either way, there's going to be an apocalypse by the end of it.
There's an apocalypse happening. They're splitting up around the world. Now, would you rather the one that comes to you is famine, who then makes you slowly waste away and die uh-huh. in horrible hunger pains?
Right.
Or would you rather it was pestilence who covered you in pox, but you got to eat?
Now, will the actual horseman be standing at the foot of my bed cackling maniacally the whole time?
That's up to you. Whether you see it as a plus or a minus, you can decide. They okay. they might watch you the whole time.
Okay. All right.
The thing with the pox is, even though I could eat all I wanted to, I have a feeling I would be throwing that up.
You might.
Yeah.
It's possible.
There's all diseases.
But that's well, they might fight it out and only the really mild ones
see.
Live, but you will die eventually. This is pestilence, the fourth horse.
So that's a minus for the pestilence.
And the sores. Right.
And then a plus, and the sores, and then the plus mm-hmm. for famine mm-hmm. is kind of the same way, because famine probably won't make you blind like a lot of diseases will.
Right.
Or deaf. So you could appreciate.
Your skin will get thin and dry and cracked and brittle.
Yeah.
You'll be able to experience, should you last that long,
correct,
the rest of the apocalypse happening around you.
I agree. It takes quite a while to actually die of
is
starvation.
A plus.
As long as you get water. We're going to say you get the water.
So that's like, that could be months. Weeks to months.
Right.
Let's say it's about a month.
Okay.
For both. You starve for a month and die, or you're sick for a month and die.
Plus at the beginning, you know, if I get a disease, mm-hmm. I'm gonna feel it right away. Starving to death, I'm gonna be fine for a couple days.
As somebody who's done a few diets, mm-hmm. it's those first few days that are really rough. Because that's when your body's going, hey, I'm used to getting food. What the fuck is going on?
That's true.
And then after a few days, because I've done a diet where I was on about less than 1,000 calories a day. And for the first two or three days, your body goes crazy and you get hunger pangs. And then your body goes, oh, okay, there's not a lot of calories going in. And it kind of resets its equilibrium. And I would get a little hungry, but really it was not that bad.
But here's the other thing. I've had, if not diseases, I've certainly been sick.
Yeah.
I've been sick before, but I've never starved.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's...
So novelty? You think you go with starvation
about
novelty
what it's like?
As non-emergency as your hunger has ever been, think about when you've been super hungry anyway and recognize that that is nothing compared to starving to death.
Or, but on the other hand, you could go with the devil you know rather than the devil you don't know.
That's uh-huh. true.
But I think I'm leaning towards the famine.
Is it? Am I a bad person that my stomach started to rumble as soon as we started talking about this lesser of two evils?
Yes.
Perhaps my body is trying to tell me something that it's like, don't starve me. Don't do this.
Oh, yeah.
To
we should have gone on a fast before we did this episode.
Oh, man.
Well, here's the thing. I've been sick. I've been really sick a couple of times in my life, right? There's no point in time where I can't choke down some soup. Right. I've never been so sick where I couldn't get some soup. And there's some damn there's fine some soups out there.
Well, maybe what we should do is put a pause on this and reconvene once we all are really sick.
Okay.
And then make another call.
We should have done that for the pestilence episode. All got really sick and infected ourselves with something.
Yeah, just started kissing bird flu chickens.
Dead crows in the street.
Yeah. If we're dying in a month, no matter which way we cut it,
yep.
There's going to be windows where I'm going to be able to eat solid food. And the whole time, I'm going to be able to choke down soup.
I absolutely agree.
By the power of soup, I'm leaning heavily to pestilence's corner.
Yeah, even after what Torin said, I'm the same because food is still such a reward for me. Like, there's a few things. You know, I'm a very carnal person. I like my pleasures, and one of my pleasures is food, for sure.
Yeah, there's nothing, like, even though you'll be sick and sweaty and chills and joint pain and all the rest of that stuff, if famine, you'll have nothing to temper it. Like except you won't have open sores and...
Like, you wouldn't have enough food to make booze either, so you wouldn't be able to get drunk. But, maybe you'd be able to get some weed, but that would just give you the munchies.
Yeah.
It'd be even worse.
Guys, don't forget, one of the early symptoms of famine is irritability. I'm just saying.
Shut up, Torin.
Joe suffers from famine 24 hours a day. He's already suffering from famine. We already know what it's like.
That's right. I'm always so irritable.
I'm gonna fall squarely in the corner of pestilence just so I don't have to give up my soup.
Soup lover.
I am a soup lover.
Only because I like food, And as I think I'm almost putting up with the goodness of food, even though the pestilence is worse than the starvation.
You know, how much do you like open sores?
No,
there would definitely be weeping sores involved, for
that
sure.
That would be pretty cool. We could do the weeping sores episode, and I could talk all about them just before I died.
The entire episode is Joe just looking, I think this one is syphilis.
No.
I think this one is
Ebola.
Ebola.
You got some necrotizing fasciitis.
What's cool is you can actually see the bacteria pulsing in this one, and it's about to burst. Hold on. I'm going to take a picture of it for causticsodapodcast.com. You can see it when...
Well, this is the thing. Now, would I have to hang out with Joe? Would we all be together? Because I think looking at Joe and his open sores is pus might ruin my appetite ruin my soup that I got going on over
Well, here. I could just rub them in your eyes and you'd go blind.
I guess that is always true. So I'm going with pestilence for sure.
Pop culture.
In the Red Dead Redemption video game, which we talked about last time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For famine, it is a scrawny horse surrounded by a swarm of locusts, extremely tough and fast speed.
Oh. Whereas the pestilence horse never got tired. It never got fatigued.
Right.
Surrounded by a swarm of locusts, though.
That's pretty cool.
That's probably why it runs so fast.
Yeah.
Gotta get away from these damn things.
They're like helping, lifting him up and carrying him a little bit.
That's right. It doesn't actually move because it's so tired from lack of food.
That's right.
Each locust just picks
the locusts.
It up. Its legs just hang into the ground, like an inch off the ground. Occasionally they hit a rock and thunk.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it does like the token, like...
It coughs and like a cloud of dust comes out of its mouth. In the Marvel Universe, Famine is Autumn Rolfson. She's a mutant supervillain who appears along with the villain Apocalypse. She was a young, spoiled, anorexic girl, a little on the nose there.
Yeah, no, I remember this original storyline in X-Factor.
And her parents were upset that she wasn't eating because that meant she might have to go to a hospital again, leading to her grades slipping.
Oh, no. Always about the grades, isn't it?
They also pointed out that if the neighbors knew that she was a mutant that disintegrated food, they'd think they were all freaks.
Oh, weird. Uh-huh. That's a weird power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's that little
don't go
too
to a
much
country where cannibalism is rampant. You just make people disappear.
I think it was something about the organic material that was like just turned to dust. And when they
her weakness
when,
was Twinkies though
when
she
they got
couldn't
them
make
in those
like, disappear
totally yeah because those
food.
Aren't food yeah when they got the in those totally like new wave like wide shouldered you know pointy uniforms that they wore in that first incarnation like she had like really super sunken cheeks and
her outfit is basically all black with skeleton drawn on the outside she's super emaciated she was kind of like a throw-in character like she never really did much it was just like oh no it's famine we're hungry
that's the thing like when you're fighting X-Factor how does your power to disintegrate food
she
help
would
you in
be
a combat
a good,
situation
even though it's a different universe she would be a good nemesis for the Flash because the Flash is always hungry because of his super metabolism.
Right.
Yeah, she would also be able to completely stop Popeye right in his tracks.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm going to have some of me spit. Boink. Boink.
There's the crossover we've been begging to see. Yeah. Popeye meets Flash meets famine.
So her power is she can cause organic matter to turn to dust at will, and she can induce extreme hunger in living human beings and animals.
All right.
In the Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett novel Good Omens, which I mentioned before, which has the four horsemen of the apocalypse, as well as the extra horsemen, famine seems to be the cleverest of the actual four horsemen in Good Omens. He's written a diet book called D-Plan Dieting, Slim Yourself Beautiful, and it keeps supermodels emaciated and starving. And he has a chain of restaurants that serve food that is so nutritionally devoid that people stuffing their faces are still malnourished.
McDonald's, basically.
Yeah,
exactly.
We are still talking about McDonald's hamburgers.
The quote in the book is, indistinguishable from any other food except for the nutritional content, which was roughly equivalent to that of a Sony Walkman. It didn't matter how much you ate, you lost weight and hair and skin tone. And if you ate enough of it long enough, vital signs.
So he's an entrepreneur.
I have a callback to Ghosts, our Ghosts episode. In Irish mythology, the Fir Gorta, which is Gaelic for man of hunger or man of famine.
Right, because Gorta Mór was the Gaelic name for the Irish potato famine.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
It's a phantom of hunger resembling an emaciated human. The Fir Gorta walks the earth during times of famine, seeking alms from passers-by. In this version, the Fir Gorta can be a potential source of good luck for generous individuals. The Fir Gorta was a harbinger of famine during the Great Irish Famine of the 1840s, and that the spirit originally arises from a patch of hungry grass, which is called Fir Gorta.
Oh, okay. All right. So the next time someone asks for a handout, you better give it to him, because it might be the Gorta Mór.
And again,
I mean, the Gorta Fir Gorta guy.
And again, you can see the usefulness of this belief, right? If you can scare the people who have food into worrying about emaciated people asking for help,
then they might give
them some because they're worried they'll get haunted.
Well, and it's good luck.
And it's good luck. Oh, it's good luck to help out the emaciated. You've got to do it. Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
We have to trick you into being a decent human being.
It's Patton Oswalt talking about religion and the sky cake.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt talks about how religion helped save people like him from big tough guys by promising them sky cake after they died if they were nice in this life. It's the same thing with this. Oh, yeah. Be nice to the starving people because ghosts
good luck.
Give good luck.
Yeah.
Movies?
There is a movie which I did not get a chance to watch called The Good Earth from 1937.
Okay.
A film about Chinese farmers who struggle to survive, adapted from a play, which was itself based on a novel from 1931 of the same name by Pearl S. Buck.
Okay. So that's totally during the Great Chinese Famine.
The film starred all white dudes as Chinese dudes.
Of course. Chinese doing terrible impersonations. Well.
And for her role as the wife of Paul Mooney's character, Louise Rayner won an Academy Award for Best Actress.
Oh, okay.
And it was nominated for Best Director and Best Cinematography and a bunch of other stuff. So it may be something worth watching.
Idiocracy.
All right.
Deals with stupidity in the future.
Uh-huh.
The argument is that only stupid people are breeding, so people are going to get stupider. I've heard from many biological scientists that intelligence is not really all that based on biology. Unintelligent parents can have incredibly intelligent kids. There's so many factors made up in it that has it happen.
Kevin, your parents, stupid or smart?
Smarty pants.
That explains a lot.
In Idiocracy, in the future, marketing is so effective because people are so stupid that everybody stops drinking water.
Yes.
Okay.
Because they drink a drink called Brondo. It's got electrolytes.
It's like Gatorade, right?
It's basically Gatorade. Because they believe marketing so much, they decide that that's what everything wants. So they use Brondo to fertilize their crops. So they basically are putting salt water, right? Because electrolytes... salt and sugar and things like that.
Yeah.
They're basically salting their own fields and create their own famine.
I saw that movie for the first time like about 3 months ago,
and
I disliked it intensely.
It didn't work as well as I really wanted it to.
Oh,
but
it was a good idea
that
wasn't executed
well.
It
just, everything devolved into pee-pee poo-poo jokes, right?
Yeah.
Like it was.
But you love pee-pee poo-poo jokes.
Yeah, when done right.
That's... No,
you're a pee-pee poo-poo joke connoisseur.
I agree with you. Yeah. The problem is, if you're going to do a movie about stupid people and make fun of it, it has to be a smart movie.
Yeah.
And Idiocracy's not smart enough.
No.
It's not totally stupid. It's not a smart... It needed to be smarter.
The premise is the only smart part about it.
Well, even that. I think if we get an idiocracy in the future, it's going to be the fact that people are just deciding that being smart is not good. It's not going to be a genetic thing.
Right.
Right? There's all sorts
of likes a president who's smarter than they are.
Yeah. Saying that Obama is an elitist because he's educated. I want a guy who's educated running my country. I want him to not cause famines because he's learned about the past.
The fact that the situation and Kim Kardashian make like $50 to $60 million a year.
It's not going to be genetics leading us into idiocracy. It's going to be culture.
We're already in an idiocracy.
It's such a weird feeling to know you're alive. It's such an awful feeling. You're dying inside, and when you wake up, startled to say, I hope I don't go crazy today. It's such a bad feeling, an ominous feeling, a feeling you know that we'll be back when the week is new. And we'll have more gross facts for you. And you'll have things you want to hear about. We will too.
Caustic Soda was recorded by Mike Leeson while in an overturned car in a water-filled ditch. To comment on episodes, make donations, and for links, images, videos, and show notes, visit causticsodapodcast.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Tweet us on Twitter at Caustic Podcast. Email us at info@causticsodapodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Something to eat? I rish. I'm Kevin Leeson.
It's terrible.
No, I love it.
I know. That's why we're keeping it.
Oh, God.
You're still laughing. It's awesome.
Yeah, but I need to do my intro. I'll wait until Joe's done.